You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Slavery is back.
Welcome to a place where private business profit from a captive labour force, yet pennies are spent on medical services to a population in which the Indigenous, the poor and the mentally ill are overrepresented. Where isolation, humiliation, and degradation are facts of life. Welcome to prison.
It depends who's telling the story, I suppose. The prisoners would have one view. The people who work in the prison system would have another. And I think it's up to people to decide where the truth is.
Give government propaganda and the media spin doctors the flick. And check out Doin' Time for news, views and tunes on prison issues from Guantanamo Bay to Christmas Island, to prisons and detention centres everywhere. Every Monday at 4 p.m. on your community radio, 3CR.
We are still fired up and we're still talking about revolution.
Hello and welcome to the Doin' Time Show. This is 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM on the dial, streaming live on www.3cr.org.au. And a warning that this episode of Doin' Time contains sensitive material, audio descriptions of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who have died, and graphic discussion of deaths in custody. This is Marissa, and I'll be with you for the next hour. This week's show is a powerful dedication to the Torches beautiful event, Confined 17, which provides a dedicated space and First Nations people who have experienced incarceration in Victoria to share their stories, culture and lived experiences through the artworks they produce. And the dates for that exhibition, and I have quite a few people joining me in the studio, so they'll talk about that very soon, but the dates for the exhibition are Friday the 1st of May to Sunday the 14th of June 2026, and I think it's been extended for a couple of weeks as well. The location is Glen Ira City Council Gallery, and I am delighted to introduce and welcome Susanna Day and also Danny and Aaron. But first, before I introduce them, I will read out their bios first of all. So Susanna is CEO of The Torch, and she's done quite a lot around the exhibition as well. And actually, I'm going to introduce them first, and then we will do the bios. Hi, everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
Okay, so Susanna, can you introduce yourself first?
Yes, I'd love to. My name's Susanna Day. I'm a very proud Mātu woman. I'm the granddaughter of a stolen generation survivor, Ivy Kilmurry. And I originally come from WA, right in the centre, and I've been in Naam for about 10 years now, and it's been my privilege to be the CEO of The Torch and been with the organisation for 7 years. And so this is my eighth confined.
And you're the granddaughter of Ivy Kilmurry?
Yes, I am, yeah.
Oh, beautiful. And were you born near Wiluna?
She was. Yeah, okay. And as was her mum, Genevieve. Yeah.
Oh, beautiful. And you oversee the organisation's financial health, fundraising, governments, people and culture?
That's me, and I do many, many other things as well. Yeah.
That's fantastic. No, you sound amazing. Okay, next one.
My name is Danny. I'm a proud Wiradjuri Nyiyapa man. I'm a First People's Arts Mentor at The Torch, and my job is going into the prisons and running the program in custody and in community.
And what land are you from?
I'm Wiradjuri Nyiyapa in the New South Wales.
Excellent. And you grew up in Melbourne?
Yeah, I was born and raised in Melbourne.
And you love art and music?
Art, music, yep.
That's great. And you've also been in prison as well?
Yes, yeah, I got out in 2020.
Where, what prison?
I was at Ravenhall.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, we hear a lot of stuff about Ravenhall. Yeah. And Aaron?
I'm Aaron Heffernan, proud Barkindji man, and I've just been part of Confined 16 when I was in custody, and now I'm helping set it up in Confined 17.
Perfect. And what are you doing You're actually an artist?
Yeah.
And what sort of art are you doing?
I do a little bit of everything, to be honest. I've got a little, couple of realistic ones and a lot of dot paintings and, yeah, a little bit of everything.
Fantastic. So, yeah, this is actually, I think it's actually a lot more personal to have people introduce themselves rather than reading out bios all the time. And I think one of the things that I wanted to let you all know is that the Do and Time show is traditionally a place of safety where people can come in from marginalised communities, artists, whether they're activists or people in prison, to talk about not just violations of human rights, but also to talk about lived experience. So today's show is really about showcasing, if you like, the artistic works that you're all doing and also, you know, advertising the event as well. So who wants to start?
Go for it, Danny.
No, not me. You know what? I'm going to handball to Danny because what is really important at the Torch, the Torch is 15 years old now, and what is been very clear from the beginning is that the voices of lived experience and artists that have done time are number one. And so I think, Danny, you've been part of how many confines now?
I think this is my fifth.
So maybe you could talk about the process of how you go back into prison and collect artworks for this show. We've got 499 artworks from 424 artists. And in fact, I just fielded a call on my way here telling us that it's actually 501 artworks now because we've snuck in two extra paintings from artists that didn't quite hit the deadline. But it's really, really important that their work was in the show. So maybe you could talk about the process of collecting work from prison and how that works.
Yep. So with the run up to confined, we sort of set a we put up posters inside with the deadlines and all the details, and usually each prisoner in the male jails usually gets only two, and so a confined is always an extra, two artworks online, and a confined's always an extra one. So they get quite excited about that, and then gives them plenty of time and plenty of notice to do their best work.
Yep.
And it also gives me time to help critique them and give them advice and sort of mentor them through the process of, you know, adding a little bit of extra here, you know, removing negative space and making sure their borders are correct for stretching and, you know, just making sure they deliver, you know, their best product for the exhibition. Because of the book as well, we do a book every year. And that's a really big deal in prison.
Really big. For me, to get the, from going from a life of crime and the shit part of life, and then to see something you've painted in a book, not just a newsletter or being in the news for the wrong reason. That's the only time I've been on papers for being the wrong reasons. And then you open a book and there's your artwork and it's really satisfying. It's really uplifting.
So that was Danny that first spoke and then Aaron.
Yes.
Yeah. Fantastic. And that's for the benefit of listeners. I mean, obviously with radio you can't see. Although when I was a child I used to think that people would come out of the radio. So Aaron and Danny, both of you have been to prisons, and this year marks the 10th anniversary of the Aboriginal arts policy, doesn't it? Allowing First Peoples in prison to earn income from artwork sales. And that's really important. When you were in prison, you were doing artworks?
Yes.
And yep. Were you allowed to have access to that money?
Yes. So a percentage of the money will go into your available spend and a percentage will go into your withheld for after release.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
So the policy took more than 40 years of First Peoples advocacy to achieve, didn't it?
Yep.
Yeah, so the Victorian Aboriginal community had been fighting for a long time to not only have our men and women make money from the sale of their artwork, but also to have access to cultural resources and to have the outside world see the artwork. And so when the Torch came along 15 years ago. It came along after two confined exhibitions. So you'll know that we're in confined 17, but I said before we're only 15 years old. That's because the organisation actually came after the first confined, which featured artwork from only five prisons from about 12 artists. After 40 years of extraordinary advocacy, we were able to get bipartisan support from both the Labor and Liberal governments of the time to enact the Aboriginal Art Policy, which allows all First Nations people in Victorian prisons, and that's all we kind of count 17 prisons at the moment, to be able to earn an income from the sale of their artwork.
Well, I'm actually quite shocked. I didn't realise that corrections would allow that.
They do. And, you know, and I think that they're one of our major supporters. Corrections Victoria, we couldn't do what we do without the support of Corrections Victoria.
Wow.
But, of course, the work that we do is completely non-government. It's a non-profit organisation. And so our role is also in soft advocacy and making sure that systems change for mob inside. And I'm sure these fellas can tell you a few stories of things that could change for the better. But right. Certainly the Aboriginal Art Policy is one really positive thing that's happening within the prisons at the moment.
It's gotten a lot better. Like, from when I started painting even to now, you can see that the Torch is making a difference. In like, for them to be able to come in and give us paintings, and we can, in certain jails, we're allowed to have our paintbrushes in our cells, rather than in some places you can only go up to rec and you can only paint when you're in the rec room, to a couple of years later, if you pay, you got to pay for your brushes and that, but because they're yours, you can have them in your cell. And it's a good way to just, I used to get locked down, have my shower, have my little routine, start painting for a little bit, and then watch the footy, and that used to be my day. But it was a good way to just fill in time and decompress when you get into the cell. Good.
Aaron, that's amazing. I mean, I have to say, and I have to be honest here, I'm definitely out of my comfort zone because I'm not used to hearing positive things.
Mm-hmm.
So this is awesome, because our show primarily, you know, focuses on, you know, Aboriginal deaths in custody, women in prison. So it's cheering me up actually to hear all this. And sorry, Aaron, what prison were you at?
Just recently I've been Loddon, Port Phillip and my MRC.
Okay. And you grew up in Werribee, didn't you?
Yeah.
Okay. And you were painting at Metropolitan Remand Centre
in
2024, is that right?
Yeah, that was my first bit of painting that I'd done, I did one at Marguerite, but it wasn't, yeah. I don't think it was, it's not quite up to scratch. Like, if I look back on it now, you can really see the difference in them.
Yeah.
But I've applied myself this time and I've really enjoyed it. And, the comparison, I've looked back just recently with my mate of mine on my phone yesterday, and we were talking about it, and he had a look at them, and he's like, "What were you doing now?" I'm like, "Dude, that was 6 years ago. Leave me alone."
That's fantastic. And you've moved to Shepparton,
yeah,
as well?
Yeah, I'd done a rehab after jail and started doing really well up there and decided to move my life up there. And then I lost my job and ended up back in jail from trying to sell drugs to pay for my house. But yeah. I'm back on the narrow now and, doing well.
Doesn't matter, you're an artist now. I mean, it does matter, you know what I mean. And sorry, what land are you on? You from?
Barkindji, New South Wales.
From your maternal side, is that right?
Yeah.
Fantastic. And you've been doing also a bit of landscape as well?
Yeah, a little bit. Doing a little bit of everything. I like the landscape stuff, but, I do a bit of it all.
Fantastic.
Try to do it a little bit at all.
Can you describe for me what a landscape looks like for you? Like what, you know, what kind of landscape painting are we talking?
I've done Uluru, and I've done that because I had my early artwork that I was just talking about, this is the one that was 6 years ago, and I had that in my mind. And after doing all the paintings that I'd done, I felt that I was better at painting than the picture I had of that in my head. So I'd done it again, and it's like night and day. It's so good to look back and like see the progress that I've made. It's been really good.
So Uluru, I always find actually that paintings have a beautiful energy, and I can't actually see that well, but I find that when I hold a painting or I feel a painting, I can actually see what's happening with my hands, like with the colour. Does that sound silly? Probably does.
It probably a little bit to us, but we're
yeah, but it's really interesting. It's energetic because you can actually, even if you can't see a painting, you can actually feel it. And I suppose it could even be like an abstract as well, couldn't it? In a way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's extraordinary.
I knew you'd see it, Susan.
But yeah. You get to experience it a different way than us too.
Yeah, that's like, right. Because everybody's different. Everybody has a different experience. And I mean, like I said, it's always important to talk about art, and I think that art is a very special contributor to prison. Let's go through to an announcement to give people a rest, and then maybe we can go on to Danny as well. Don't worry, Danny, it's your turn soon. Okay, so I'm just going to go into an announcement.
The fuel crisis is putting growing pressure on our services and the people who rely on them. As prices for staples like oil and flour soar, donations are dropping, but the demand is rising. For thousands of refugee families with no government support, the Asylum Seeker Resource Center is the only safety net left. Please donate today at asrc.org.au. Together, we keep the safety net strong. The Asylum Seeker Resource Center is a 3CR supporter.
And you're listening to the Do and Time show, and we're speaking with Susanna, Danny and Aaron. And we were just having a chat while that announcement was happening about how art is interconnected with culture. Danny, can you explain what that means, and Susanna as well?
No, I'm gonna go back to you, Danny, because I want you to talk about your echidna.
Perfect.
Your echidna that you found.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Can I tell you why? I want you to talk about your echidna.
Yeah, no, it's good to when have a healthy discussion.
I met Danny how many years ago? I want to say 5 years ago, 6 years ago perhaps. And you're a very different man 6 years ago. And I think that what culture and cultural connection has done for you, both in an artistic practice but just in a cultural practice, is slowly healing you in a way that maybe you don't even see yourself, but we certainly see. And I have the privilege of seeing as your manager but also a colleague. I want you to talk to us about when you found an echidna.
Well, I found a deceased echidna that had met its unfortunate end by a vehicle on the Hume Highway, and after checking it and making sure there was no babies or anything like that, I decided to bring it home and put it into a tub with some worms and slowly let it decompose, and then collected the quills and everything and taught myself the process of cleaning everything, and have made a few pieces of jewellery from it.
Okay.
And I've also done the same sort of thing with some kangaroo bones that I found, and one of my confined pieces this year is actually a bone and wood sculpture paying homage to the kangaroo for everything it does for our people and our culture, as you know, from skin to fur, to bones, tools, to food. And it's just, you know, the more and more you immerse yourself in culture, the more and more you can see different things that you can actually make art and tell a story with. You know, I've also, you know, this is the first year I've done woodworking. You know, like I've got a colleague that, you know, who's a really great woodworker, who's sort of mentoring me and helping me go down that path as well. So I've done some hunting boomerangs, and I've made a couple of number sevens that they aren't actually in confined this year, but they're still sitting in my garage. I've done a bundi, I've done, yeah, done a lot more. You know, usually it's only one painting in confined, but this year I've got, you know, one painting, two wooden pieces, an emu egg, and a sculpture. So,
and I think for so many of us that didn't have the chance to grow up with culture or cultural practice the way many Aboriginal people do and Torres Strait Islander people do around this country, for us, when we can make and when we can practice culture, for me it makes my spirit feel much stronger. I feel much more capable to do the work that we do, and that is what we hope to be giving to our mob, not just economic participation, but that cultural connection, which is leading to social emotional well-being, you know, all of those good things. And I'm sure Aaron can speak to that. Sounds to me like your practice in this last sentence has changed you and perhaps your outlook.
Yeah, well, I sort of, growing up, it was like I didn't really have any influence of my heritage or anything like that. And then I sort of went to MRC, and even then I wasn't, like, because I didn't know I could paint. Like, I didn't really, like, anyone could paint, but I didn't know I could paint well. And then when I went down to paint, and then you got 20 to 30 other brothers there, and it's like, I've never met any of them. And then you walk in, they're like, straight up, walk up, hug, bit of a handshake, like, what's going on, brother? What's your story? How are you? It's that, and it makes you feel like you got your own little mob inside jail. It's really nice. So,
yeah, it was similar for me. Like,
yeah,
I always knew I was, you know, I was Indigenous, but we didn't really grow up in an Indigenous community. And so, you know, going to prison, it's where you meet people that, you know, you meet distant cousins, and it's like, oh, you're related to this person. Oh, you're from there. Oh, I'm from there. Oh, who's your grandmother? Or who's your auntie? Who's your uncle? Because everyone gets got spread out so vastly across the state, you know, between a few states, that, you know, then you, you know, and it's the sad, it's probably a sad thing that, you know, if it hadn't been for prison, I probably wouldn't have really delved, you know, I've always, you know, I'd always identified as Aboriginal, but I wouldn't be as culturally, like, knowledgeable as I am now.
100%.
Yeah,
because 100%, brother.
You know, life gets in the way, and it's just like, hang on, this is really important to me now. And, you know, you hang out with the elders in jail, and, you know, we used to have different cliques. We'd, you know, you'd have the guys that, you know, want to still run missions and get in trouble and do drugs in jail, but then you'd have the other guys that just want to do programs, and they want to paint, and they want to help support anyone else that wants to do what they're doing, which is, you know, sort of where I ended up at the end of my sentence, being, you know, I was the peer educator, so I ended up becoming like a mentor to some of the guys and helping with reading and writing and reading legal mail and reading Fantastic. Writing letters to family and all that sort of stuff, and just supporting the brothers, you know. And now when I go back in, the love that I get from the guys that are still in the system is incredible, you know. Like, it's like, I was at Western Plains this morning, and there was a fella who'd just come back in that I'd done jail with, and he couldn't believe it when he saw me in plain clothes as a worker,
yeah,
instead of as a prisoner. He goes, I thought I would have seen you back here in greens, not as a worker.
That's perfect, where you're sitting there.
Yeah,
get the mic. Good.
Yeah, sorry.
And what's really important is that you have a son.
Yeah.
And he can now be a proud Aboriginal man, and sooner than you found that way for you.
Yeah, 100%. Look, I was trying to get him to come with me today. Like, he's still a bit sick from yesterday, but
sure.
He's like, oh, I would have loved to have come any other time, but yeah, he was a bit crook in bed. So
you know, and that's something I'm happy that I, because like you were saying, like, we didn't grow up with it, so it's not instilled in us. So I done a handprint of my son and a handprint of my daughter on little 30x30, and that I'd done the artwork for them on that, just to, and they put that up in their room. So my daughter's 3, my son's 8. I've done a painting for Caden with crayfish and a cod, because he loves fishing, so he's got that up on his wall already. So he's got visual of some, like his cultures in his room. He's got the visualization of it straight. Look, I didn't have any of that.
Yeah.
So he's already in front of me with knowing all this stuff, and I'm thankful for that.
Fantastic. I mean, what I'm getting from the whole experience of this show is it's about art is sacred, and it's not only connecting to culture, but it's also connecting to, you know, the history. And for me, the positives are coming out because I always interview about genocide, deaths in custody, and, you know, people being arrested and people being racialized by the police. So this is actually, in a way, like, fantastic because it's looking at how art can heal you and explore themes of kinship and cultural identity and personal journeys, isn't it?
And don't get us wrong, Black deaths in custody is still an absolute stain on this country.
Oh, yeah.
And continues to this day to oppress and to marginalise and to make further vulnerable our mob. And it's still very much happening in Victoria today. What we see from our artists in the torch, that despite that oppression and despite those systems working exactly the way they are designed to work, that we are able to find economic self-determination and cultural connection and brotherhood and sisterhood in spite of those systems. And I think what we're trying to do at the torch is that soft advocacy work which brings the ally community closer to our stories and gives our artists voices when they are systemically silenced and allows for that ally audience to realise that that not everyone in prison is who the media have told them they are, you know, like the,
exactly.
That they are people and they are fathers and they are mothers and they are grandmothers and they deserve second, third, fourth, fifth chances and to be respected, culturally respected people at the end of their sentence.
Absolutely. And I think it's great that we've been able to talk about these things because my job today on the show is really to guide you all so that you can talk about not just the exhibition but about the lived experience. So there are 424 First Peoples artists with lived experience of incarceration in Victoria building new pathways and economic opportunities through art. Is there anything else at all? I'm sure there's lots more
years
stories.
Years and years and years.
Years and years.
Yeah.
Aaron, maybe you could talk about your Confined 17 artwork.
It's a little bit, it's a very, very different piece, actually. It's the, so traditionally, our Indigenous artworks are a lot of lines, a lot of dots, and this is my headspace and it's a lot of triangles, which is a bit strange for a Indigenous art. I feel it is anyway. But it's, yeah, so it's got all these different colours and it's just, it looks a mess, to be honest. But it's my headspace while I was in jail and to try to paint that was exactly a mess. Like, that was the way my head felt. And then towards the arse end of it, I sort of, once I got sentenced and had a date that I was getting out and it was, things become a little bit more clear and when I knew what direction I wanted to be heading in when I got out and, yeah, but my piece is called My Headspace and it was, yeah, a bit of a mess, but I like it.
Yeah. No, that's a good thing.
What's changed now? Do you think that if I asked you to paint your headspace today, what would it look like?
Rainbows and butterflies.
Did you say rainbows and butterflies?
Yeah.
You serious?
It'd be a lot brighter. It'd be a lot more sound. I don't know what it'll look like, but I might do that.
You should.
Yeah.
I'm interested to know, Aaron has just come from installing Confined. So one of the things that we do at the Torch is make sure that our artists are there as many steps of the way as they can be. And one of those ways is by giving particularly newly released artists an opportunity to actually do the physical work of installing. And we give people, you know, professional pay and, you know, that creative, meaningful opportunity of knowing what it looks like to kind of curate and install an exhibition. So maybe you could talk a bit about just the work that you did today and, like, what can the people expect?
Awesome.
Well, we're just painting walls and getting all the artworks ready and in position, and you rock up to a art exhibition and you're like, oh yeah, you see all the artworks and they're all hanging up nicely, but you don't see the work that goes into it behind the scenes. So it was nice to be able to go there and experience that part of it. But yeah, just painting walls at the moment, hanging like a lot of sticky tape, a lot of marks here and marks there, and all the stuff you don't see. It was good to experience.
People are used to seeing art exhibitions with white walls because we usually give art a lot of space to be interpreted and to breathe, but not this year.
Wow. We've got dark cherry reds and dark blues, light blues, teals.
Beautiful.
And yellows, yeah.
Lots of different colours.
Yeah, like my painting.
It's got to be seen to be believed. And as you walk into the space, and I'd really love people to be able to get down to Caulfield and see the show.
Can you give the address?
Yeah, it's on the corner of Glen Ira Road and I want to say Hawthorne Road. Yes, in Caulfield. So it's at the big Glen Ira City Council, like town hall down there. It's close to a train station, close to the tram. And as you walk in, it's one of the largest kind of public galleries in Victoria. And as you walk in this year, you are going to be treated to five very beautiful videos of four artists and our Titters group. So we run an all-women's group for all of our women that have come out of prison. They meet up every month and we've videoed them this year for the exhibition. So there's some really beautiful kind of documentary-style videos of our artists and telling their stories as you walk in. So that's a real visual treat. And, yeah, just a huge amount of ceramics that are coming out of Loddon, which is really extraordinary, and some other prisons. We've got a beautiful room of weavings and we've got some beautiful woodworks, a lot of paintings as normal because that's kind of the – it's the art form.
It's accessible at every jail.
Yeah, it's something that you can do in your cell at most jails, and it's where people often start and then they start kind of – you know,
ooh,
being able to.
I was all right at that.
Yeah.
Ooh, I was all right at that. Let's see what else I can do. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And we've got some fellas being able to buy roo skins on special spend now. And so there are burnt and painted roo skins. It's really diverse and as it should be.
And what date is opening night?
We are opening in a very fancy two-night opening Wednesday, Thursday night, and then it's open for the public at 10 o'clock on Friday.
And, well, sorry, what date?
1st of May.
The 1st of May,
The 1st of May, May Day.
Yeah.
So the 1st of May is and so that's at Glen Ira Gallery, is that right?
Yeah, corner of Glen Ira and Hawthorne Roads in Caulfield.
Fantastic. So let's have a song, I think, to have a bit of a break. Do people know Bart Willoughby?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to have We Have Survived. And that's pretty important, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah.
This song is it's on the album. We're coming out pretty soon. On the wrong side of the road. Hope you like it. Down.
Listening to the Do and Time Show, 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM on the dial. And this show is about, I've actually got some people in from The Torch who's presenting Confined 17, providing a dedicated space for First Nations people who have experienced incarceration in Victoria to share their stories, culture and lived experiences through the artworks they produce. So we were just talking off air about digital painting.
Bless you.
I'm afraid this is not 3AW and there's no hold button. just got a bit of hay fever. But yeah, we were talking off air about digital art, and you wanted to talk about that?
Yeah, well, this year we've been hosting in community workshops for the Procreate stuff. So that's an app on the iPad where you can do digital art and work out your paintings and concepts and all types of stuff. Me and one of our very well educated on the subject colleagues, George, who used to be a teacher. She's really good at her Procreate stuff. So me and her have been traveling around Victoria. We've held one in Shepparton. We've held one in Morwell and we've held one in Melbourne. And I think she's also gone to Ballarat and Geelong with the other arts mentors. And it's been really successful. And it's just bringing a whole new medium to our in-community mob. And a lot of them have really, really picked it up really fast and just surprised on how they can actually create digitally. Mm.
Yeah, I come out to do the Shepparton one with you guys and it blew my mind. It really blew my mind. Like, I'm pretty much computer illiterate, but Georgie broke it down for me as basic as, and it was just painting with it, like, except when you make a mistake, you can just backspace it, don't stress. Oh, Oh, if you want, you can make your own sort of brush. So you can do, you can zoom right in and do really fine lines, or you can zoom out and do really broad lines. Really, really good. Like it was really good.
What change do you think that that made for you? Like, was that like a change in your, like, what might you do with that information?
Oh, just the fact that you can zoom in and concentrate on the smallest little area, but it be the size of an iPad screen, like the details that you can get in it, it's a game changer.
Mm.
I just haven't changed the game yet.
And does that still reflect traditional art? In some ways, digitization can be difficult.
I think it's blending the old with the new.
Yeah.
Perfect.
You know, it's like, you know, sometimes you have to go forward with the times. And to be like, I've always been into, like, before the Procreate stuff, I did a lot of Photoshop work. And to me, I'd always sort of just lay my paintings out in Photoshop to sort of get everything sort of right and change things. And then I would then put that onto canvas.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And in fact, with some of the sculptures that I'm looking at here, there's a woolen rug, is there?
Yes.
What is that?
That's it's a tuft rug. One of our amazing artists, Alfred Carter, he has set up his garage as a rug-making station, and he gets out there and he makes all these rugs by hand, and they are absolute works of art. I love them.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely amazing.
And just quickly on the digital art stuff, last year we, this is going to sound like we're big noting, but we are. Last year we sold $1.2 million of art to our community, and of that, about $200,000 was licensing. So a big part of what we do is our artists, they always maintain their intellectual property, so they always maintain the rights to sell and use their the images of their artwork, even if the artwork is long sold. So we've got 6,000 artworks in our catalogue, if you will, that people can license. And Procreate really is going to, like, if our artists start using Procreate more, that digital art that can be created, we can be kind of going into bat and going in with the best of them, if you will. Aboriginal digital art is a really big market. There's a big gap there, and we're really hoping that our artists can fill it.
And making sure, of course, that Aboriginal artists are not taken advantage of.
Exactly. Yeah. And all of our artists get 100% of the sale price of that art, so we don't take a commission. We're supported very generously through the state government, federal government, local, and through philanthropic trusts and foundations, so that our artists can get 100% of the sale price.
Yeah, I mean, it's sometimes with art, when you're expressing yourself through art, it could be that there's ancestral stories as well, and having healing from the history of what happened.
Yep.
Is that right?
Yeah, definitely. Some of the stories are absolutely, you know, heart-wrenching, that, you know, when people, you know, like, they'll paint about missing their children and losing family members and all types of things. And, you know, like, to a person who doesn't read the story, you might not know that. You know what I mean? And it's like, you know, to a normal, or just anybody really who looks at it, they might see, oh yeah, that's a goanna and a couple of cracked eggs, but those cracked eggs could mean that, you know, they've lost their children or their,
yeah,
and things like that, you know. So the story is what really tells. And that's what, like, one of my main jobs is sitting down. Whenever I collect an artwork, I will sit with the artist, and I'll be like, what's the story about? And they'll tell me the story, and then me and him will sit down and we will write the story together, and he will tell me, and then, you know, we will write a great story and make sure that what he was feeling really comes across to everybody that gets to read it and see it.
That's really important, and I'm so glad that was mentioned, because you're doing that as a mentor, isn't it, for artists to help them to express that story and then put it into the painting.
Yeah, because, you know, with mobile, you know, literacy can sometimes be a struggle. And, you know, I was sort of got the benefit of sort of being okay with it. So, and I've done enough stories of my own and helped enough people with theirs that I think I'm quite well versed in it. So I can really, I really like to sit down and get to the bare bones of it and get a really good story.
Very, very important. And in particular, because, you know, as we all know, you know, since 1788, that there's been a lot of genocide and also First Peoples having stolen wages and not being paid properly for their work, and that it's important to have that recognition.
Yeah, absolutely. Since the Aboriginal Art Policy was enacted in 2016, we've given back $6 million to our artists. And that's over 1,000 artists that have received that money, and we're not stopping anytime soon. So, you know, we see that as, you know, in a way a redistribution, but ultimately it's people finding creative, meaningful economic justice and importantly connecting to culture while they do it.
You know, while you were talking, Susanna, I was just having a look at this media release in front of me here. And there's actually a really spectacular quote here that I just found from the media release. How do you pronounce this?
Narangeri.
Narangeri artist Flick Chaffer-Smith said, "The torch is a big contributing factor to not getting locked back up. It's life-changing when you make that first art sale, especially if you're inside."
Maybe Danny can tell, and well, Aaron certainly can talk about that moment where you made money for the first time, perhaps.
I actually got two stories for you here.
Yeah.
So my first art piece that got sold was Future Dreaming from 2024. And my mum and dad, I was incarcerated at the time. And my mum and dad went to the show and they said, "Oh, we've seen your painting, rah, rah, rah." And guess what? And I'm like, "What? It's sold." I'm like, "Oh, yeah. How much did you pay for it?" And they're like, "No, we didn't buy it." I'm like, "Swear you didn't buy it." And they're like, "No, we did not buy it. Mum said, I asked your dad, should we buy it? And dad said, no, let's see if it'll sell. And it sold." So I'm like, "Really?" And I was like, yeah, it was just really, like, I didn't know how to feel. I was like, excited. I was like, yes. But I've even got a better story for you right now. It's happened on the way here. I got a licensing deal. And Claire was telling me that it was $3,000 should land in my bank in the next couple of weeks because someone's bought my artwork for their company. And I'm like, that's amazing. Like,
and this is Aaron?
Yeah. Like, that's so good.
A lot of the licensing deals that we do are reconciliation action plans. So they'll often be the artwork that will sit with a reconciliation action plan for the life of the plan. But it can also be things like people wanting to represent First Nations art on their websites. It could be for like a promotional deal, like an Aboriginal health kind of thing. Well, so
there was two, actually.
Oh, what was it?
There's two licensing deals. One was for a football jersey.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So
that's wonderful. But see, this makes me happy hearing all this stuff, you know.
And made me pretty happy too.
look, there's nothing better than like when an artist sells his first, his first painting when he's incarcerated, because it's like, you know, not a lot of mob has money to put into people's accounts, and you know, like I remember the first one very clearly. He had tears in his eyes because he could buy a new pair of shoes and he didn't have to wear the prison issue shoes. He goes, "I can actually go onto the special spends list and buy myself a new pair of Adidas sneakers."
And what does that mean for someone?
And that means everything. Like,
absolutely.
It's very similar to high school, was with what you wear on your feet tells a lot about who you are. you know, yeah,
really for good or the bad, right?
Yeah, for the good or the bad,
or the ugly. Exactly.
You know, and a lot of people can get beaten up and have their shoes taken off of them and all that sort of stuff.
Absolutely.
But to be able to do a bit, you know, work and like create an artwork, sell an artwork, and then be able to purchase your own brand new pair of shoes instead of getting hand-me-downs, or
it's not just the money that you get from it.
No,
it's the fact that somebody else wants to spend their money on something you put together, and that's the satisfying part for me, was when someone else wanted to spend their money that they've earned, they've gone to work, they've woken up in the morning, gone and they're willing to spend a whole day's pay on something I painted.
100%.
That's some satisfaction right there.
I still can't believe it.
Every
sometimes.
Painting I sell, I get that.
I get that same feeling.
Yeah, I still think, you know, I still don't see myself as an artist, but, you know, I sold my last painting for $2,500.
What do you mean?
I know, but I just don't see it.
What do you mean?
I know, but it's like, you know, I don't know. It's just weird. I love creating art.
Closer to the microphone, so I can hear your beautiful voice.
Yeah, I love creating art, but it's just, you know, it just doesn't, you know, you think of an artist, you think of Da Vinci, think of Picasso, and it's just like, you know.
But I think of Daniel Laird.
Oh, well, thank you.
Me too.
But yeah, but it's still a great feeling, and it's always a shock, and it's like, oh, I can't believe I sold that.
But it's a lot more than that, though. It's about expressing things on country and culture and healing. So it's a lot more than just a painting.
Also, just picking up on something Aaron had said before, how much did you make when you worked in prison per day?
Per day? About $6.75.
And how much would you have sold that Future Dreaming work for?
$150 my first one. And then $350 the next one.
Mm. Is that restrictive? Were they doing restrictions?
They were price bracketed. So
really?
Future Dreaming.
The Future Dreaming was in a range of $150 to $350.
So they're 30 by 30, small little
They're very
works.
Small paintings.
Oh, small, okay.
Yeah. But it's, so you got 6 different price brackets or something, five different price brackets. But when you do your normal sized art, it's you can sell it for $50. You could sell it for $10,000. I don't think there's a limit, is there?
No.
Yeah.
So. And I suppose the point I'm making there is the dignity in making real wages, making professional wages, and I'm assuming the very different feeling that both of those things give you.
Yeah.
Absolutely. For sure. Fantastic. So it's approximately 4:52 and this show finishes about 5 o'clock. So, well, a couple of minutes to five. Let's give the address and the details of the exhibition again.
Okay. The address is Glen Ira Town City Council Gallery at the Town Hall. It's the corner of Glen Ira and Hawthorne Roads, Caulfield. And the exhibition dates are the 1st of May to the 14th of June.
And shockingly, this gallery is open every single day of the week. So it is open, I believe the hours are 10 to 5. Yes, 10 to 5 Monday to Friday. And on the weekends, 1 till 5. And we this year have been given a very generous grant from Transurban, which allows us to have our artists there every single day of the week. They are receiving, as I said before, professional wages to invigilate, which is just a very fancy word for saying gallery sit. So they will be down there and very, very happy to talk about their journeys and talk about their art that is on display and talk about the torch in general. And, you know, can also go deeper into hyper-incarceration rates and be really happy to chat with what I imagine is an incredibly engaged 3CR audience and a very socially just 3CR audience about the show in general.
Absolutely. And, of course, we can't forget our women either, because, Susanna, I think you were talking about the women before, about the growing presence of women artists within the program. And they're also going to be celebrating their work, aren't they?
Absolutely. We have, I think last time I looked, the engagement numbers for our titters is double what it has ever been before. We have quite an extraordinary women's arts mentor. In fact, it's the person that gave the quote for that media release, who's a Ngarrindjeri artist, Flick Chafer-Smith. She is one of our artists with lived experience of incarceration, and post her sentence came back to work with our women. We've seen pretty extraordinary engagement rates, because when people with lived experience, just like Danny, work with our artists in prison, our artists in prison respond very favourably, because they understand what it was like to be in their chair and in their shoes, their Adidas shoes. And our titters are really beautifully represented this year with their own room and a beautiful weaving display. So, and just on that, there is quite an extraordinary range of prices going on in the show. So if you're feeling like I couldn't possibly afford any Aboriginal art, we have some really small things all the way up to very expensive things. So it's a pretty accessible show at accessible price points.
Fantastic. And just quickly, so central to the 2026 exhibition, there's also a large scale video installation. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so we've got five videos that have been made by Wiradjuri video videographer Josh Scott. So they are featuring artists Ray Young, who is from Gippsland, and we've got Rick James, and we have a beautiful video about our titters group, and one of our female artists, Sonia. They're just really beautiful snapshots of their stories, and just really enrich the show. And in fact, we are having a video kind of night, if you will, like a movie night, where you can watch those videos and enjoy a Q&A with those artists as well, which is a bit of a fundraiser for us.
Well, I am really looking forward to the exhibition, and I hope to get there if I can. And but certainly with listeners, I'm sure that I'm going to encourage listeners to really rock up to this exhibition. Danny and Aaron, are there any other quick things that you want to say?
I just hope you can all get down and check it out. It's going to be a good one.
And a cheerio also to all people in prison as well.
See you, mob.
See you, mob.
Look, it's been great having a yarn. And we'll be ending our show pretty soon with Black Fella, White Fella by the Rumpy Band. And that's our traditional song. So stay tuned, listeners, for the Do and Time Show every Monday from 4 to 5 for the Do and Time Show. And in the meantime, take care of each other and be kind to each other. It's goodbye from Marissa. And everybody's going to say goodbye now.
Goodbye.
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 Okay. Take care. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Are you the one who's gonna stand up and be counted? Are you the one who's gonna
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.